Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
College graduates should not have to live out their 20s in their childhood bedrooms, staring up at fading Obama posters and wondering when they can move out and get going with life.
Are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? Tonight's a big night. Everybody's contemplating what's gonna happen tonight, but
yes,
we'll just find out when we find out. But what'd you think of that Ryan speech, huh? What did you think of that Paul Ryan speech? Stab, 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 stab. Bang, bang, shoot him up. Stab, 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 stab. Bang, bang, stab, stab, stab. Can you imagine what those people were saying over in the Democratic Party when they heard Paul Ryan give that speech? The fear, the absolute fear when they were listening to that man's speech. Oh, those folks at MSNBC, or as they've been affectionately called so far, MSDNC, what were they doing? They couldn't deal with those insults flying back and forth. With those insults flying back and forth at the sitting president, college students laying on their bed, looking at the fading Obama posters, wondering when they were going to get on with their lives. Oh, man. Stab, 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 stab. It's Reese on the radio. You know where you are. 2 minutes after the hour on this August the 30th, 2012. Now, I want to talk about a lot of things that happened in the Republican National Convention yesterday. Hispanics got no love from the networks. ABC brought on a liberal from Visiones or Telemundo or I don't know, whatever. They wouldn't even listen to that woman Martinez, who said that great line when she left the meeting with some Republicans, got in a car with her husband and said, "I'll be damned. We're Republicans." She didn't even realize it. It was a great line. Latinos needed to hear it. Latinos needed to hear it. But Paul Ryan, that was the speech I was looking forward to, in a way that I didn't think I should be. You know, he's a vice presidential candidate, and I remember the big hubbula who about Sarah Palin 4 years ago. But this time, I knew Paul Ryan was going to get out there and he was going to tear it apart. And I was anticipating how he was going to do it. And he kept it very simple. And when he made his jabs, he made them good. He made them stick. You know, he not just stabbed with the knife, but he twisted it too. The speechwriters over the Obama campaign, they're working on it. They had to put out an ad immediately afterwards. The next day, put out an ad calling Paul Ryan misleading. But now they look like a joke because the fact checkers have found out that Obama did close a plant in Janesville, Wisconsin. Found out that he did nothing to save it after he went there and campaigned in October of 2008 and said that it was going to stick around for another 100 years. And then he doled out taxpayer money to GM. And what happened? Plant ended up closing anyway. In fact, new reports say today that the plant can still be reopened. But the Obama campaign never gave him a dime. The Obama White House never gave him a dime. So all of those people are out of work. And I wonder why. It's sad and disgusting. But what are you going to do? Now, another interesting thing that I saw this morning And if you watched any morning television today, you probably did or didn't see this, but a certain individual caught my eye. Somebody who's really excited about the Mitt Romney-Paul Ryan ticket. Someone I didn't expect. And it's somebody I know that JC's going to be really excited about that I'm talking about. So he's going to jump in here. So let me just tell you. I'm watching Fox and Friends this morning. I watch all of the morning news programs. I watch all of them. Good Morning America, the CBS News This Morning, the Today Show, Fox and Friends. I watch them all. So I'm watching Fox and Friends. And a Tampa native is on Fox and Friends this morning, promoting a new company, a new small business he just opened up. And he gets on TV and he goes, "What are you going to do, brother? What are you going to do, brother? When Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney come for you, brother." That's right. Terry Hulk Hogan, who I didn't know, and I probably should have guessed this, was an Obama supporter 4 years ago. He was a Barack Obama supporter 4 years ago. And now, he's rooting for Mitt Romney.
He said, I did vote for Obama, man. And it turns out he didn't know what he was doing, man. You know, so I think Mitt Romney is going to have to pick him up like I picked up Andre the Giant. I'm going to slam him in WrestleMania.
Hulk Hogan picked up Andre the Giant?
Yeah, can you believe that? Yeah, he picked him up.
No.
Come on, JC. I know you want to get in on this, man. Come on, man. That's your dude, isn't it?
That useless, talentless hack.
What you going to do, brother?
He's a bandwagon jumper. He always has been.
You know what? I will agree with you there. You're absolutely right.
And he's trying to. The reason I don't blame him for wanting to see Obama the socialist out of office, because he's already lost at least 60% of his goods to his daughter's friend.
What? Through his daughter?
Well, his daughter's friend, the boyfriend that her mom was dating.
That's right. Well, he's got this new. Maybe you can explain this to me. Now, he was promoting Impact Wrestling.
They're not new.
Are you familiar?
Yeah, they're not new. They're TNA. They've been around for about 10 years now.
Yeah, that's what he was talking about. Well, they're new to me. I know they've been around.
They're actually. They're a Universal Studios attraction.
Oh.
The geriatric of wrestling.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I mean, he's the geriatric of wrestling, for Christ's
sake. Is it a lot of old guys? Is Razor Ramon over there?
No. They actually have a pretty good roster. In fact, I use a lot of the guys for my shows.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Yep. I have a lot of friends that work there now, but they're the Universal Studios attraction. They're on Spike on Thursday night. They're on now. They come on at 9 o'clock.
Tonight he talked about that. He's going to be on Spike TV. In fact, right now he's on Spike promoting his new shop and his venture with Impact Wrestling. But I found it odd to see him there because I knew he was an Obama supporter 4 years ago. So when I saw him on Fox and Friends today, I was a little stunned. And, you know, again, I don't like bandwagon jumpers either. I don't like this idea that you do something on these lines, along these lines, to be a part of like the next wave, like, you know, like the next new thing in order to benefit. But I mean, he seems somewhat genuine.
Yeah.
You think so?
Got to be genuine to the kid that his son paralyzed for life.
So you're not a fan of his anymore, man. Come on, man. How can you not be a Hulk Hogan?
I've never been a Hogan fan.
Come on, man. He's on the winning team, man. Give him some credit.
Winning team? What winning team?
Romney and Ryan.
Oh. that when he came. I thought you meant a wrestling.
No. But hold on. I'll put you on hold. I'm going to finish up my monologue. So we talked about yesterday with this whole thing. You know, the MSNBC has decided they know what route they're going. Out of absolute fear, their job is to just, they're going to scream racism in every corner. You know, they have decided who it is that they are communicating with. They don't care what the ratings are here. Every speech is being criticized by MSNBC. I turn over to them, I'm watching them, and I listen to what it is they say after every speech. They are so desperate, so angry. Oh, they are so angry, they are so desperate that the only thing they've got is race baiting. And CNN is, they're going that route too. They're bringing in your, you know, your resident Negroes, Roland Martin. Also got to give a acknowledgement to Mr. Davey D. As many people may remember in the blogosphere and in the internet world, Mr. Davey D, who I contacted today, who I had to rip apart for showing support for some old Roland Martin. He's out in Tampa as well. I'm going to see if he can call around 8:30. I asked him to call around 8:30 to give us some reports from Tampa, see who it is he spoke to, see who he communicated with. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the head of the Democratic National Committee, is in Tampa at the Republican National Convention. You can see that story on Breitbart.com. But this woman got there. And like everyone else who's there, swarmed by the news media in Radio Row. And I've done Radio Row. I did Radio Row 4 years ago at the Democratic National Convention. I spoke to all of the liberals. They all came and spoke to conservatives. I know some of them saw my black ass and said, oh, yeah, he must be safe. That's a Negro. He's at the Democratic National Convention. He must be with us. They walked away in tears, upset with themselves. I thought this guy was a liberal. No, Negro, no. You've been fooled again. But Debbie Wasserman Schultz is at the Republican National Convention in Tampa. And what is she doing while she's there? She's only speaking to people like NPR, National Public Radio. And when she goes on their shows, they have to give her people a list of questions they're going to ask. And when other people swarm them and try to get quotes, she has her people push the reporters and the radio hosts out of the way to keep them away from her. Everyone else who goes there, they get swarmed. They're getting swarmed. People are running up to him. Roland Martin, he's out there. People run to him. He gives interviews. He's a liberal. He wants to go out there because he wants to start beef anyway. He totally wants to challenge these Republicans. That's who Roland Martin is. He's a cowtown Negro. He wants to go out there and go make the point for the liberals, for the white man who enslaved him. He's got to go out there and yass a boss for him. What you got the problem with the big government? Don't you know what they're trying to do is good? Yes, Roland, we know. We know who the real house nigga is. Don't you understand that the big government that take care of people, they give them the welfare check and give them housing? Don't you know that? The government got to get bigger. We got to get all the money from everybody. Come on. They got to take care of us. Coon-ass Negro. But he's out there. He's challenging the Republicans because he thinks he's going after the rich white man. And they calmly say to him, Roland, you're wrong. Sorry, Roland, you're wrong. I understand that you don't like wealth. You got 3 shows, Negro. Ain't you getting paid? You got 3 shows. You're on CNN. Got your own Washington Watch show. You're all over the place. You're Tavis Smiley Light. You're like low-carb Tavis Smiley. What's going on, brother? You worried about the rich? You got a lot of paychecks going on there. And you worried about rich whitey? Where's your money going, Negro? But Debbie Wasserman Schultz, back to my point, isn't trying to meet up with any conservatives. She doesn't want to be challenged. She just wants to go in there and just create a little ruckus.
let me come down here and find out what they're doing. Let me find out what they're talking about so I can report back to the president.
And that's what she's doing.
Let me look at all these people cheering and applauding and let them all notice me and see if somebody will spit on me so I can report back that, look at the Republicans spitting on me. They don't like women. They spit on me.
I'm not going to lie, Debbie. Although I might not want to spit on you. I don't want to slap you. I just want to expose you. I just want somebody to go out there and really expose you for the fraud that you are. Oh, I know we're all a little bit, we wish we could just, I mean, if they slap you, it'd be to slap some sense into you, if it were. But other than that, people just want to expose you. You won't be the Democratic National Committee chair next year. You won't be. You'll be out of the job. Oh, and pray to God that they just get you out of office altogether. And are you going to be a speaker at the Democratic National Convention? I hope you are. Because I want to watch everybody rip you to shreds. Oh, okay, sorry, look at that. Black man on the stage. There is a Negro on the stage at Republican National. His name is France Placide. He sounds like he might be Haitian. Let's listen to him.
Thanks to Governor Bush's school choice program, I got the chance to choose a better school. Making my education my priority, I enrolled at one of the toughest high schools in Miami, Archbishop Curley Notre Dame. I'm sure like a lot of us, it was my mother, Carlette, who really pushed for a choice in my education. I'm glad she did. Her devotion to my future has given me a chance to succeed. I graduated from Wagner College, and I'm looking forward to a life of learning and serving my community. Who knows what the future would have held if I didn't have a choice in my education? But I do know the numbers for failure, and I probably wouldn't have a good chance. Governor Bush's school choice program gave me a chance to achieve academic success in a school that was best fit for me. I took it from them. Thank you.
Bravo, Negro. You better thank them Bushes. Bush know what they're doing. I know a lot of people don't believe that, but they do. They do know what they're doing. I'm not a big fan of Jeb Bush, folks. I'm not going to get into the story about him. Not a big fan of his. He kind of kowtows a little bit. He's much more social conservative than even his brother, George W. is. But what the hell? He's all right by me. He was a pretty good governor, even though everybody called him a hack and said that he robbed the election in 2000 for his brother. But, you know, what can you do? Anyway, we got more. I got to take a break because I got plenty of stuff I need to get on the table. When we return, stick around. We got a whole lot of stuff to get into. We're going to ask, what is a Negrohood? When we return, anybody heard this story? What is a Negrohood? The New York Senate candidate who sent out a mailer with the word Negrohood in the mailer. He claims it was an accident. I don't believe it. But we'll find out when we get back. Stick around. It's Riesland Radio.
Well, hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle, and this is Afterburner. Well, today, just a short look at the program as we move out of the political preseason and onto the actual field. And I don't think it takes a prodigious leap of imagination to see how the next 2 months are going to play out, because in the time between the end of the Republican primaries up through the Republican convention, both teams have made it pretty clear what their game plans will be. So, first, the Republicans. There was a great deal of fear among conservatives that Mitt Romney, the man that essentially invented Obamacare, would become, in a time of the massive liberal destruction on the limits of the federal government, simply the most liberal Republican candidate in the modern era. Conservatives, myself included, and rightfully so, I might add, were slow to embrace Romney, and not the least because it seemed to us that he, like the Republican Party establishment, were taking us and our Tea Party concerns for granted. And then came the selection of Paul Ryan, which wasn't just a sop to the conservative wing of the supposedly conservative party. Choosing his vice presidential running mate was, as always, the first real glimpse into the decision-making character of the candidate. Now, Barack Obama in 2008 chose Joe Biden to bring gravitas and seriousness to the ticket. Romney, who has gravitas and seriousness himself, chose Ryan. By choosing Ryan, he also placed a very, very large bet on the character of the American people. We saw this bet enlarged on in Chris Christie's keynote speech at the Republican National Convention. That bet goes something like this. The American people are not, in fact, the poorly informed, selfish, moral cowards the Democrats are betting that they are. No one is denying that both parties have been feeding the American people free pie for over 40 years, and no one is denying that we haven't eaten it happily and gotten fat on it. The Democrats think that the people will, in the end, do whatever it takes to keep the pie coming. The Republicans are betting the farm on the fact that we are, in fact, an exceptional people. Not so exceptional that we would have the moral fiber not to get into this mess in the first place, but exceptional enough, perhaps, to realize that it's time to get up off the couch and get to the gym before our fiscal heart attack occurs. Now, several years ago, Barack Obama was asked if he believed in American exceptionalism, and he famously replied that he did, in the same way that the British believe in British exceptionalism and the Greeks believed in Greek exceptionalism. Romney and Ryan are betting we are made out of sterner stuff than the Europeans, who, at the beginning of the summer, simply voted themselves more free pie. Wisconsin, a deep blue state where a red governor went to the people with a plan and the guts to tell the truth, showed us that making the tough decisions would pay off. Along with similar reform governors in New Jersey and Louisiana, Wisconsin showed us that we might in fact be a people worthy of delivering on that bet. And so what about the Democrats? What about hope and change and optimism and a new politics and unity and transparency and all the rest we were promised back in 2008? Well, those qualities are unrecognizable today. I was saddened, if not surprised, to realize that Barack Obama was everything we feared he might be, an Alinsky-A tool of the radical left, who had a great smile and talked a great game on teleprompter, but who turned out to be small and petty and without any vision that extended beyond the horizon of his own inflated ego. Biden, Mr. Gravitas, turned out about as well as his stimulus decision and his foreign policy assumptions and his Affordable Care Act, disconnected from any reality beyond the furtherance of Barack Obama. Mr. Hope and Change has run a relentlessly negative campaign accusing Mitt Romney of being a vampire, of giving people cancer, and similarly hopeful and uplifting attacks. His campaign ads routinely get four Pinocchios or pants on fire ratings or result in the DNC chair being grilled for 10 minutes for out-and-out distortions. He doesn't care. He's reduced from attending press conferences and taking questions from the Washington Post and the New York Times to doing sycophantic morning radio call-ins and giving in-depth interviews about his favorite color to magazines like People and Entertainment Tonight and Glamour. But in the end, that's appropriate for the incredible shrinking man, isn't it? People, Entertainment Tonight, and Glamour. He was elected on the basis of his celebrity, famous for being famous, President Kardashian, in Rush Limbaugh's immortal phrase. With no record to run on, he's resorted to the kind of dirty campaign of political personal destruction that got him elected in the first place, when his opponent's sealed divorce proceedings against a different Ryan somehow got unsealed by the Chicago political machine back in 2000. He's shown himself to be a base, petty, small little man, the president of the United States, reduced to C-list venues and desperate fundraising tactics like begging for your wedding gift money. And in the final 8 weeks of his presidency, as it becomes clearer and clearer to the American people he talks down to, he will, like a lake drying up in the desert, become more and more bitter and unpalatable and poisonous. Until finally, I think, we'll see him for what he always was on the first Wednesday in November when he gives his concession speech. Small and sad little fellow, really, still looking for the love he never got from his absent father and his neglectful mom, who learned early how, in his own words, to appeal to what people wanted him to be. An actor who somehow managed to land the biggest role in the history of the world, only to be left speechless as to why or how he ever wanted to play the part in the first place.
Bill Whittle, you have got to see the infighting happening on MSNBC. This is exactly what it is that I'm talking about by these morons over there on that channel. They don't even know what they're fighting about. And this is exactly what happens when you get all of these liberals in the room together. They don't even realize that right now they're being watched and ridiculed for their incessant stupidity. But it's happening. That's them. Anyway, moving right along. Okay, story that people seem to be buzzing about. I don't know how significant this is going to be or whether or not it's going to be important. By the way, it's Reese on the radio. It is 27 minutes after the hour on August 30th, 2012. Whether or not... I forgot to cut off my music. Whether or not this surprise speaker at the RNC tonight is going to make a difference remains to be seen to me, because I've never seen this man give a policy speech. But I will be jipping it tonight in the event that he comes on before the show is over. And that, of course, is Clint Eastwood. Now, Clint Eastwood is going to give this surprise speech. He's not a keynote speaker. He's just going to be a surprise. It's no longer a surprise now because everybody knows he's going to be here. But let me ask you this, and tell me whether or not I'm wrong. Clint Eastwood, former mayor of a small town in California, has never really expressed his political leanings. I know he has in small town politics, but not on a national stage. Now, I've made the argument over and over and over again. Clint Eastwood, or anybody for that matter, do not show your politics. Do not put them on your sleeve. It's not good for you. It's never good for you. Because you've got to appeal to a broader audience that doesn't want to know your politics, and sometimes people take your politics personally.
Time out.
Go ahead.
Did he not do the Super Bowl commercial?
I'm about to get into that.
Give me a sec.
Don't wear your politics on your sleeve is what I said to people like to Oprah Winfrey. I also said it to 50 Cent. 50 Cent had a meteoric rise in the music business. All of a sudden, he's on Vote or Die t-shirts by that fool P. Dummy. And he's not selling as many albums anymore, and people aren't trying to listen to his music because he showed his partisanship. But he's surviving in the game. He's doing pretty well. He's not doing as well as he did when he first came out, but he's surviving. So anyway, all of these people, they show their politics, and you see it in their movies. You see it everywhere. People stop going. They're turned off by it. Shut your goddamn mouth and act, or shut your mouth and sing. We don't want to know what your personal view is, unless it's beneficial to you. If you coming out as a Republican or a Democrat boosts your audience, then it's good for you. If it doesn't, shut your mouth and just sing. Put little hidden comments inside your music that maybe people can figure out. But other than that, just shut up. Now, Clint Eastwood, let me tell you this. This is why I know. Unforgiven, Million Dollar Baby, Clint Eastwood's won Academy Awards for these films. And they're great films. Unforgiven, one of my favorite Westerns ever. I got a lot of favorite Westerns, but it's definitely on my top top 100. I love that movie. So, as JC just pointed out with the car commercial for Chrysler, the Halftime in America commercial, a lot of people remember, if you do remember, that the Obama campaign sent out a tweet saying that they were excited about Clint Eastwood doing a commercial for a company that they bailed out. And they thought it was great for them. Then Clint Eastwood had to come out and say, hey, I didn't do that based on any political leanings. This whole thing was, they paid me to do it. They wrote a script. I thought it was great. I read it. I got paid for it. That was the end of it. Clint Eastwood decided to do that, and that was it. But see, then he went out to, I believe it was Wisconsin or Michigan or whatever it was, and went out and endorsed Mitt Romney, which I'm sure is a slap in the face to the Obama campaign after the Halftime in America ad. Now, as I just said, I'm usually against the idea of people showing their political leanings when they're in the entertainment business. But that being said, this is a good idea for Clint Eastwood. But let me tell you why. He's got this movie coming out called, Trouble with the Curve, with Amy Adams and Justin Timberlake. It's a fall movie. It'll do about $25, $30 million in the box office overall. It's not some Academy Award-winning film. Nobody's paying attention to it like that. It's just a movie. And he's got his family doing a reality show.
His family is doing a reality
show? Yeah, Mrs. Eastwood and company.
Oh, that's right.
So I think that at 80 years old, yes, he's 80.
No.
Clint Eastwood has finally hung it all up and said, I've had to deal with this country and its far left leanings for way too long. Now, I say this because when I was in jail, I read an article in Esquire magazine with Clint Eastwood on the cover. Anybody remember that?
No.
And Clint Eastwood outright called America a bunch of pussies. That's what he said. He said, America's turned into a country of a bunch of pussies and whiners. I believe that Clint Eastwood knows that he's not long for this earth. He's tolerated. He kept his mouth shut. He did what he had to do. He put out his movies. He won his Oscars. His name is solidified in the world of cinematography or filmography. He's the man. You can't doubt him. You can't take anything away from him. At 80 years old, he'd still probably punch you in the mouth and make your grandmama feel it in Venezuela. But my point is, Clint Eastwood doesn't have to give a crap anymore. And that's why he's doing this now. Because what I really think Clint Eastwood is saying to Hollywood, when you got guys like George Clooney, pussy. When you got Sarah Jessica Parker, pussy. When you got Anna Wintour, plunk. When you got all of these celebrities, Chris Rock, Spike Lee, Roots Cricket. When you have these people, when you have these people out there in the country,
Russell Simmons.
Oh, forget about Russell Simmons. He's not. He's not close to even, you know, Clint Eastwood's
Russell
range.
Simmons is a gazillionaire.
Yeah, Russell Simmons does music though. I'm talking about people in his
Russell
field.
Simmons does more than music.
I know, but let me get my point is, he's finally sick and tired of these hacks who are calling themselves Hollywood celebrities talking about politics when they don't know anything. Now, let me let you in on another thing that you may have forgotten. And it's a very, very relevant thing that you need to know. Clint Eastwood hates Spike Lee. He hates Spike Lee. He hates Spike Lee.
With a passion.
Let me let you in on a little bit of a little story, folks. I'll let you in on a little story, folks. When Clint Eastwood had two films out, one called Letters from Our Fathers, I believe it was. It was an army. And there was another film, something, Flags of Our Fathers, I think the name of the movie was. Somebody will help me out with that. And then he had another movie from the opposite side called Letters from Iwo Jima. And it was the same war, same movie, but told from two different sides. And it was critically acclaimed. Spike Lee had the nerve to come out and rip apart Clint Eastwood because there were no Negroes in his film. And Clint Eastwood couldn't believe that in something that these fools call art, they wouldn't criticize a guy putting the crucifix in a jar of urine because they defended it as art. They didn't criticize the same guy for painting the Virgin Mary with elephant dung. They defended it as art. When Madea runs around in a skirt and fake boobs and rear ends, they defend it as art. But here's this director who puts this movie together, writes it, directs it, produces it, tells him how he's supposed to produce his art to appease this little Negro named Spike Lee. And Spike Lee is running around holding all of these quote-unquote campaign fundraisers for Barack Obama. And I know that deep in Clint Eastwood's heart, he is saying, you want to see star power, nigga? You want to see real star power, you little cricket? Watch what happens when I get my ass down to Tampa. Let's see if you can draw a crowd like that. Let's see if you can speak at the Democratic National Convention. Didn't I see you on the BET Awards dancing around with Samuel L. Jackson doing rap? Isn't that what I saw you doing? You want to see real star power, nigga? I'll make your day. Vote Mitt Romney. That's exactly what he's doing. He's spitting right in the face of that troll. Take that. There's nothing you can do about it. Hey, put Spike Lee out there. Put Spike Lee at the Democratic National Convention. I dare you. Put Samuel L. Jackson out there. I dare you. Is George Clooney going to come and speak? I dare you. Sarah Jessica Parker, is she going to come out there and talk about politics? I dare you. Anna Wintour, I dare you. Will and Grace, I dare you. It's never going to happen. Clint Eastwood is spitting in the face of Hollywood. It reminds me of a guy by the name of Albert Owens who used to hang out in Washington Square Park. And he used to sing this one song on his guitar. Look him up. His name is Albert Owens, often booed on off the Apollo stage. And he used to sing this one song. And he used to make all of us in the crowd sing along with him. And that's what Flags of Our Fathers, thank you. And the song he used to sing is the song that Clint Eastwood is going to be singing tonight when he's on that stage. As long as I got mine, F everybody else. Oh, as long as I got mine, if everybody else. And that's all, those are words to the song. Clint Eastwood's got his. He's got his Academy Awards. He's got his accolades. He's got his goddamn respect, as Chris Christie would put it. And everybody loves him. So, I'm looking forward to seeing Clint Eastwood tonight. And I promise you, we're going to jip it. We are going to watch that speech because it's got to be heard everywhere. Right at you, Spike Lee. That's exactly what he's telling you. As long as I got mine, F everybody else. You too, George Clooney. As long as I got mine, F everybody else. Anna Wintour. As long as I got mine, if everybody else, body else, body else, if everybody else.
Are you tired of government picking favorites in business? Is red tape making it impossible for you to earn a living? When private businesses collude with the government to exclude competition, you get cronyism. How do you get rid of it? You can try passing laws, but that only covers up the problem. There's a better solution.
Hi, Willie Bays here with another fantastic product. Crony Clean, the spray that breaks down cronyism by breaking down government bureaucracy. Normal products attack the side effects of cronyism by passing more laws and business regulations. But Crony Clean is different. It targets the root cause of cronyism, too much government. Using proven political science, Crony Clean eliminates the government influence on business, giving everyone the right to make a living. No more concentrated benefits, no more dispersed costs. America! Why waste your time and money fighting an uphill battle against special interest groups? With Crony Clean, you have the power to fight. Crony Clean can be applied to restore economic liberty, property rights, the First Amendment, and much more. Order now and receive Crony Clean for the unbelievable price of nothing. Just pay fewer taxes. But wait, there's more. Call in the next 20 minutes and you'll receive a free gift, the Dollar Deflator. It forms a strong barrier to protect your dollar savings from inflation. Keep America free by keeping the government out of businesses. Order now.
Offer not available in Washington, D.C. and surrounding areas. Side effects may include more economic freedom, jobs, less corruption, and improved quality of life. If you're a politician or lobbyist, please consult your doctor before using Crony Clean. Order today.
So, Biden says
they gonna put y'all back in chains.
And when he gets called out for it, we Republicans get accused of taking what he said out of context. It's always us taking y'all out of context. It's always, you're so misunderstood. And y'all are getting more indignant by the day as we Republicans expose you for how cynical, hateful, greedy, covetous, racist, and just straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy you Democrats actually are.
I think what's happening.
Propaganda.
Glaring examples I like to point to about how Democrats are always making excuses is Bill Clinton at Robert Byrd's memorial. Bill Clinton tries to make light of Democrat Senator Robert Byrd being in the KKK and tries to sell us on overlooking the racist position he ran on by saying, give him a break. He was just trying to get elected. You're exactly right, Bill. That was key for Democrats. And a big reason why they got elected was because they were trusted to represent the racist sentiments of their constituency. This is at the core of the Democrat Party. People didn't vote for Republicans for this. They voted Democrat. But the Republican Party is the party of racists. Based on what? Barry Goldwater? Lee Atwater? Strom Thurmond? Did I miss anybody? I'm sure you liberals got a few cherry-picked figures for your talking points. But while you try to recite these names, keep in mind the words of your Democrat darling, Bill Clinton. Robert Byrd was just trying to get elected. That's pretty much the way it was for Democrats, period. The hotbeds of bigotry in America are commonly recognized as the southern states, right? And keep in mind, the people are going to vote for those who represent their racist values. And we've already agreed that the southern states have been the hottest for bigotry, right? Well, that list of so-called racist Republicans that liberals try to bring up is as insignificant as the last sheet of tissue on a toilet paper roll after Michael Moore binges on buffalo wings. Let's look at these racist states, shall we? Texas. Oh, yeah. Whole lot of racist rednecks down there. And of course, they're going to want people in office who represent their white supremacist culture, right? That's why out of 47 governors, 38 of them have been Democrats and only 7 have been Republican. Oh, but years of Democrat racist representation is nothing compared to the strategies of Bush Sr.'s campaign manager Lee Atwater. But hold on, that's just one of those ultra-racist states. Alabama had 53 governors, 42 have been Democrats. Only 6 chosen by the people of that state were Republican. But you want to hold Republicans responsible for racism. Okay. The racist Democrat representation continues with Mississippi. Ooh-wee, that's a barroom hoedown of bigotry right there. They've had 64 governors in that state. 52 have been Democrats, and only 6 have been Republicans. Yeah, but Strom Thurmond, shut up. What about Democrat segregationist Lester Maddox? And for every so-called racist Republican you liberals try to point to, there's like 10 Democrat actual racists. But y'all still really want to believe that racism is the fault of Republicans that badly, huh? Despite these figures? Okay, let's continue. And I'm not even talking about congressmen and senators and mayors and such. That would take too long. But yes, the majority of them were Democrats too. Georgia has had 82 governors. 47 were Democrats. Only 4 were Republicans. Louisiana, a lot of racism there. 53 governors. 30 were Democrats. 11 have been Republicans. Arkansas, 45 governors, 8 Republicans, the rest were Democrats. Tennessee, 58 governors, 10 Republicans, 34 of them were Democrats. South Carolina, 116 governors, 8 of them Republicans, 90 of them were Democrats. Do I really need to go through all these states where racism was the hottest? I thought you were Democrats. Isn't it the majority rules in your party? Well, the majority of your party's history is racist, yet because of minority instances of arguable racism in the Republican Party, the minority ruling is that the Republicans are racist? See how contradictory y'all are? Are you understanding that the racist population in these states that are commonly known as the most racist states of the United States elected people who represented their racist values, and the people representing their racist values were Democrats? You can't lay the blame on Republicans when it was Democrats controlling these states. The Democrat Party platform is rooted in racism. Have you ever read the original Democrat Party platform? The original included language to protect their so-called right to force people into slavery. But Republicans are the racists because the original Republican Party platform was to abolish slavery? And when liberals are reminded of this, they always say the same thing. Yeah, well, you know what, Zoe? That was a long time ago, and you need to get over it. Really? Okay, well, you know what? Slavery itself was a long time ago. Why don't y'all get over that? Marinate on that a bit while we pick this up on the next Zonation. Straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy.
RNC, as I'm sure many of you are doing, I got to say one thing, and I'm actually saddened by this. They brought up this woman from California who's a friend of Mitt Romney's and Ann Romney's, and she's telling the story about the friendship that she formed with them and their sick daughter. This is the only part of these things that I don't like on either side. I don't like it. I rip Democrats apart when they do it. And I rip apart Republicans when they do it. You can't bring in dead children into the conversation. Now, in this particular woman's story, the baby, the daughter died at 26 years old or something. And, okay, fine. She was an adult. She still had, you know, birth defect problems, but she died at 26 years old. I understand that, you know, you want to talk about how compassionate Mitt Romney is. And sometimes you got to go off the deep end. But you know what? I criticize Democrats for doing that all the time. They always push their kids out there. And when I rip President Obama about it, I got to rip Mitt Romney when he does it too, or any Republican for that matter. And I'm sure you've heard me being very critical of Malia or Sasha, whichever one's the smallest one. I think it's Sasha. With the whole thing with Barack Obama shaving, he tells that story. Daddy, did you plug up the hole? Like, daddy is going to dive underground or underwater, like Aquaman, and going to plug up the hole. His daughter believes that daddy's doing it. No, I haven't dug up the hole yet. Of course you haven't. Leaving that to other people to do. But you'll take full credit for it.
Daddy, did you plug up the hole?
I just don't want to hear about how Mitt Romney cared about your sick daughter. We all care about your sick daughter, especially if we knew you. We'd all care. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you have to be a fool. If you were my friend and you had a sick daughter who had birth defects and was dying, I would feel bad too. I don't need to hear this story on a national stage. It almost seems pandering. It seems fake and phony. It takes away from certain things. That's just me. Let's get Dennis in here, along with Sal, both of them up in the Massachusetts area. Dennis, does it bother you when people do this, when they pull on the heartstrings?
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, you have to understand the big picture. And the big picture is many Americans fall for this stuff, and they are looking for any angle they can to get a vote. That's the reality of modern electoral politics.
Yeah, I still think it's kind of cheesy.
I know.
That's the only part.
I had a Hollywood question for you.
Sure. Since I know you want to talk about Clint Eastwood.
Well, in a minute. I mean, since you didn't shut up for 53 minutes, I mean, plus thoughts.
I'm monologuing, man.
Yeah. I was wondering if your rant and rage against the great Spike Lee was your delicate, diplomatic way of trying to tell the gentleman that no way were you going to star in his next movie, the Reese Hopkins autobiography.
He wouldn't do my story anyway, but yeah, I was definitely telling him that. I definitely wouldn't. If Spike Lee offered me $1 million to be in this film, I couldn't do it just because of who it is that I am. I
That's because
want
you wanted $2 million. Who the hell are you kidding?
Sal in Boston is also on the line. How are we doing, Sal?
I'm doing well. I got to tell you, after hearing that Clint Eastwood impression, I'm a little blown away. That was awful. I give you credit for trying. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about Clint Eastwood. Who doesn't love Clint Eastwood? I mean, you know, spaghetti western Clint Eastwood is a badass. But when I think about this, I had high hopes for this convention. But, you know, day one, I think it was after, like, the second time they panned through the hall after one of the rousing moments in a given speech, and I thought to myself, you know, they're up there trying to espouse how they're, you know, they're looking out for everybody, and we're the party that cares, and we're gonna bring you up, we're gonna give you a hand up, not a hand out. But does it dawn on anybody that every single face out there is white? I mean, that can't help them.
But wait a minute. That's the thing. You see, what I did was I knew that was going to happen too, Sal. That was why I've been literally flipping the channels. I've been channel surfing like a maniac during this thing just so I can get an idea of how the cameramen are covering this. When I go to PBS, I've seen in two nights PBS show two black people.
Exactly. Literally. I'm watching PBS myself for that same reason, to see how they're covering the speeches and the post comments, and it's fascinating. But let's
MSNBC, if they catch a black person in the audience, they immediately cut away.
You know, but let's take the speeches. I mean, what a bunch of stiffs. What a bunch of stiffs. I get the whole thing, we did build it, okay? They're playing that thing up, I think, way too much. They're not really talking about, I think, enough to the average person and how they're struggling right now. And get the whole, you know, they're trying to ride this thing, and I just don't think it has the power they think it has, because they're appealing.
I'm gonna disagree with you there for one reason. I'll tell you why they're overdoing it. They're overdoing it to the point where it cannot be denied. The idea is to make sure that we did build it is part of the lexicon, that no matter what the Democrats do when they come out there, that term is still ringing in their heads. What's Barack Obama's – everybody's going to have to go out there during the Democratic National Convention – and they're going to have to respond to we did build it. And the way that they have to respond is by saying, we never said that you didn't build it. Of course we know you built it. Of course. And they're only doing one thing, repeating their meme. That's why they're forcing it, because they know that the Democrats have no choice but to respond to it, because that's what they do. They're forced to respond to it. So, I mean, I get your point. You don't have to say it too many times. We get it. But that's because they're preaching to the choir.
I've never heard Portman speak. I'm glad he's not the Veep. I mean, he was awful.
Well,
I thought he was awful.
They said his secret name would be Rob Portman. Go ahead, Dennis.
You know, at the end of the day,
Freeze, you've been in the industry. I don't want to step on his lines. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
No, go right ahead. Go right ahead. I was gathering my thoughts anyway.
I was going to say, Reese, you've been in the industry for a long time, right?
Sure.
Radio industry. And you know it's transient. In other words, you have listeners who tune in, tune out. And I found this also when I was running for office. You have to repeat yourself over and over again, because you don't know who is listening, who's just tuning in, and who's turned out. And I think that's the analogy for that we build it over and over again, because not everyone is going to be glued to the set for the entire session.
Right. But, you know, as true as that is, especially in this thing, each person who's out there who's using the you did build that, I'm finding out that what I see them doing is finding, well, this is their theme. They've decided what their theme is. What I've really, really found in a lot of these sort of speeches, What I'm really, really finding in each and every one of them is the way in which they're applying it. And it's not all the same. Yes, the term is the same, but each time they apply it, they're finding new ways to do it. You know, one person talks about a mother, another person talks about them, another person talks about their father, another person talks about their grandfather, another talks about, you know, the guy who, what was it? Who was the person who talked about the donut place that he and his family go to in their neighborhood, and they're up at 12 o'clock at night, overnight.
Homer Simpson.
Making,
I'm not sure.
I can't remember who it was, but it was probably the
Couldn't
first
Couldn't have been Homer
night.
Simpson. That's the only donut guy I know.
But it was one of the speakers during the first night, and he talked about this Asian family that came to America, and they opened up this donut stand, and he goes there every day to go eat their donuts. And, he, you know, he, of course, mentioned, you know, they did build that. So everybody had a certain story to tell, which is what I like. Everybody didn't come in and say, my mom built the store. My dad built the store. My mom built the store. My dad owned the hardware store. Nobody did that. They sort of found all interesting ways to bring this up and kept up with the meme. Again, I know it's to force the Democrats to have to respond and say, hey, black person on PBS, black woman.
Maurice, what do you think was the best? In all the conventions you've seen, I have my favorites. What two speeches are the most memorable to you? Not of this cycle, but of all conventions, Democrat, Republican.
Ever?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to say Ronald Reagan in 80.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to say after that, as far as a convention speech is concerned, I know I'm going to get panned for saying this, but I liked Sarah Palin's.
That was good. Memorable to me was Hubert Humphrey in 64, but not Senator Goldwater's before you were born, but I remember it.
Hubert Humphrey.
Zell Miller.
Zell Miller. That was a good one.
And the Culture War speech in 1988. By Pat Buchanan.
Oh, really? I got to check
and then
that
I listened
out.
To it on NPR, and you had Totenberg, whatever her first name is. She said, "This is the most hate-filled speech I've ever heard." This is even before he said it, because they got the advanced copies.
They got the advanced copy.
Guys, let me just ask you real quick. I mean,
sure.
Don't you kind of feel that they're missing it? Where are the young people? Where are the blue-collar workers? You could tell me they couldn't drum up a couple union workers to speak, a couple of firefighters. You know, these people that are a big part of our country. All we're seeing are the small business owners. I just think they're missing it. And I don't know.
Wait a minute, you don't see young people? Sal, I'm seeing a lot of young people.
A friend of mine is 19 years old, and he's a delegate.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of young people there. Really aren't seeing any young people there?
Well, I see them in the audience, but have you noticed any, you know, do you see any speakers?
Well, okay, I'll agree with you there. But you know what it is?
They had one guy from New Hampshire speaking briefly. But I don't see the speakers. It's all, you know, all the small business owners, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just what I've caught. I haven't watched it 24/7. So I'm hoping tonight that they... You know, that Romney's able to get some kind of a message that reaches out to people because it's critical.
Maybe they had it earlier, but they didn't have it in the prime time. So you're saying you want to see him on prime time.
Well, wait a minute. Now,
right. What people are
saying. That's understandable. That's a great idea.
I can agree with you as well. But, Mike, don't you see a lot of Gen Xers there? I mean, you see a lot. If you consider, you got Marco Rubio. You got, who's this guy? The governor of Puerto Rico. He's a young guy. These guys
and
aren't,
he can't even vote for Romney.
He can't even vote. But there are a lot of people who are speaking who, when you say young, I mean, maybe you're looking for people who are roughly in their 20s, maybe early 30s.
Oh, absolutely, because I think that electorate, that group of people, you know, there's so little that Romney's going to get. They're not reaching the maybe 3% of those kids?
I think it's larger than that. I think Paul Ryan appealed to those kids last night.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's been appealing to them for a long time. Let's bring in Mike in Florida.
Okay, so I wasn't going to go at Paul Ryan this early in my being on the phone, but I can't believe people are not calling Paul Ryan on his absolute flip-flopper bullshit.
Well, what are you saying is, okay, you're talking about flip-flopper with the, with Simpson Bowl?
What has he done? He requested stimulus funds for businesses in Wisconsin, even though he is a staunch anti-stimulus small government guy. He was one of the few conservatives who backed the Medicare Modernization Act, which was the plan written by Big Pharma that increased seniors' prescription drug benefits under Medicare to a cost of $400 billion. You know, he voted for TARP. He voted for the Patriot Act. He voted for NADA. He is, you know, he's part of the machine, and he's just a flip-flopping liar.
Well,
nobody's calling him on it.
Yeah, I think it will come up as soon as they go into these debates, you know, as this thing moves along forward. I think the Democrats will point that out.
Yeah,
right.
And
what's the Joe Biden record? I'm going to free you off from
right.
Chains,
remember
boy.
What Joe Biden's going
no,
to do.
No, no,
you
can't go at, the guy has no credibility. And if you ask where the young people were at the Republican National Convention, oh, they were there. They weren't there for Mitt Romney, however. They were there for Ron Paul.
Right. That's right.
You know, Ron Paul.
Well, the delegate
the
I know
with,
was a Ron
yeah,
Paul.
I think you're absolutely
Ron
right.
Ron Paul
that.
Filled the Sundome with 10,000 people. And
but Ron Paul isn't the candidate, and Ron Paul is not the answer. You
but
deal
the
with
GOP,
the hand you got.
Dennis, needs to bring those people under their umbrella.
Look, I know
not.
That politics is a game of addition and not subtraction.
And they're subtracting those people from their tent.
I know.
Well,
and
in the case of Ron Paul, let's just make one thing abundantly clear. Ron Paul has been absolutely defiant when it comes to inclusion as far as it's concerned. He has completely alienated himself to the point where even his own son is in a lot of ways saying, Dad, I respect you, but I've got to go with the party here. We've got to be in power. Where Ron Paul...
You know what that's
let's
called?
Let's flip it. What if Ron Paul were the nominee? No way in hell would he be reaching out to the Romney people. You can't have it both ways.
Do you think the Romney people would go vote for Obama then?
You don't know what's going to happen. You never know.
If you put this guy's policies to the average American without the media and bullshit in the way, people like what the guy has to say. People like what Gary Johnson has to say.
I like his domestic, but I don't like his foreign policy. It scares the hell out of me. It scares the hell out of me when he says, go ahead and legalize drugs. It's okay, we can say we can shit on Israel. But that's moved because he's not the nominee,
when,
and he has alienated everybody, including his own
realize
son.
When the American people are polled whether marijuana should be legalized, it's overwhelming.
I don't care what a poll says. If you took a poll in 1933 in Germany and said, should the Jews be out of the office, they'd all say, yeah.
Dennis,
you to rouse. That doesn't make
How
it right.
How old are you? How old are
62.
You,
62.
Then you don't get it. Something like 80% of Americans have used marijuana at some time in their lives.
I don't care if 100% of them use. What is right is right. And it's about time politicians grow a pair of balls and say, look, agree with me or not, this is where I stand, either follow me or get the hell out of the way.
To alcohol, sir?
Wait. Hold on. Valid question. Hold on. I understand. First of all, Dennis is older. He's 20 years our senior. Okay? He's
I've been in the business for 52 years in politics, since Jack Kennedy, 1960.
He's looking at this from a practical way. Because of the ramifications of using drugs, it's not about whether or not – okay, I understand 80% of Americans have used some form of drugs, be it prescription or whatever. Okay, fine. We won't dispute that. I know about the poll that says some 65 to 70% of people think that it should be legalized. I understand that poll. But again, remember – if we were to make the argument of majority rules in this country, then I'll harken back to our argument just the other day about abortion. 52% of people in this country think it should be illegal. If we were
this is not a democracy; it's a republic.
Yeah, exactly. That would be exactly as a democracy. Then it should be the rule of law. But it can't.
Well, my point is that the Republican Party are going to tie themselves to people like Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan and totally kick anybody who doesn't fully toe the line out of the tent. You are going to see a legitimate third party by the year 2016 or 2020.
I don't see that.
Bank on it. Bank
I don't
on
see
it.
That because Mitt there Romney was not my choice. I was for Herman Cain. Then I was for other candidates. Mitt Romney was my governor. He was not my choice.
People
are
going
to
have
either piss in the tent or piss off the tent.
You're talking over each other. Hold on.
People are going to stand up one day and reject this. These are the candidates we're given nonsense and this lesser of two evils nonsense. And I don't think it's going to come from the left-leaning side of it.
Whoa, but hold on now. Wait. Now, you cannot say that. Although it's – okay, I'll admit it is not – it is not permeated or not pushed itself to the national ticket of President of the United States. I understand that. But if you look at some of these congressional districts and these Senate districts where we're talking about how, quote unquote, the voice of the people have been involved, the Tea Party is a fine example of
The Tea Party has been corrupted by the GOP. You have to look at the
come
history
on.
Of the Tea
this
Party
sounds like Ron
movement.
Paul over again.
The Tea Party movement
Mike,
was not started by the GOP. The Tea Party movement was started as a bipartisan movement. And then the Tea Party
right.
for America, which is the group that runs it now, which is totally separate from the Rick Santelli Tea Party, is the one that took the national hot spotlight.
You know,
all I know is the Tea Party was a bunch of people pissed off with Obama spending all his money, and it was economic. It wasn't social.
Wait. Are you telling me that Ted Cruz, Scott Walker – well, Scott Walker was maybe Tea Party for America, and I'll agree with you there. But you're telling me Ted Cruz, Alan West, you're telling me that these were GOP?
Absolutely.
Not Alan
West.
They're
all getting money from the same people. They're not getting money from grassroots. They're getting money from the same GOP backers. The Tea Party is corrupt.
Guys, the greater point that Mike is making is valid, though, and this is what I was trying to get at. Fair enough. You know, there's a ton of Paul delegates in the audience. We see them on the camera. But my point was, they didn't bring them in. Is Rand Paul even spoken over?
Yes. He spoke yesterday.
So he did. Okay, I missed that. Okay.
He was one of
the
speakers.
At the end of the day, you can't ignore that sector of the voting public. And
big is it, though? Is it bigger than – I'll put it to you this way. I'll give it credit if it's bigger than the 1,900 votes that Joe Biden got. Is it bigger than that?
At the end of the day, this is so tight that if you don't turn out a decent amount of those people who would have considered voting had they been a little bit more involved or brought in, you are going to lose. That's really, I think, where – it's not these so-called independents.
Well, let me ask this question, if I may. Is it a case lately, for the past few years, is elect my guy or I take my marbles and go home?
I agree. I think that's entirely true. But at the end of the day, if that means the difference in the election, what do you do?
Look, America is a two-party system. I live in
Massachusetts.
We had a third-party candidate. Excuse me. In Massachusetts, for the past two gubernatorial elections, we've had minority, literally, governors. The one who succeeded Mitt Romney, Deval Patrick. And he's never got a majority vote. And why? Because we had three parties, an independent, siphon off all the votes and elect this dolt. And like it or not, the reality is a third party, whether you are a Republican, a Democrat, liberal, or conservative, is going to split a vote and elect the guy you don't want. That's the political reality, whether you like it or not. I'm sorry.
50% of the time, they're going to elect the guy you don't want.
Yeah, but wait. First of all, most people are thinking of that as far as the two-party system not working. And this is where I've always had an issue with this argument with the third party. People have this argument that says that with only a two-party system and with money and finances and all that other stuff and backing, that's going to create the problem, that in some sort of way businesses and corporations are in charge of who it is that gets elected. You know what? If that were the case, truly the case. You know, the Koch brothers had money in 2008. Why didn't they push McCain over, you know, over the hump? They didn't. You know, these groups, so to speak, were not out there forging into this new frontier of campaign finance that was pushing people who didn't belong in. Because if it were really that the basis of all of that, Barack Obama would not have been president of the United States in no way. Hillary Clinton would have whipped his ass in a landslide. With a fundraiser like Bill Clinton, there's no way Barack Obama should have beaten that juggernaut. Even
but
the reason why Hillary...
Young vote, the very young vote, the 20-something.
No, I understand that. But what hurt Hillary Clinton, and you know she was caught saying it. She was caught saying it by a news reporter, that she felt entitled. She said, I'm a Clinton. We have a legacy in the White House. There's no way that I'm supposed to be losing by this virtual unknown. And she had only lost them by a million votes. It was 19 million to 18 million. There's no way.
Wait, don't you see the same thing with the Kennedys that they feel entitled to? You got to elect me nationwide because my uncle was murdered or my grandfather was a Kennedy. What the hell? And people fall for this crap all the time.
Right. I don't believe in this whole thing about quote unquote financial or this financial helping from super PACs or all that other stuff or corporate backing is what determines who on which side gets in. I just don't believe it because, again, I always harken back to Hillary Clinton. There's no way that somebody like Barack Obama should have won.
They backed both sides.
Sure they did. But
that's how it happens because it doesn't matter who gets in because the same people give the same money to both candidates.
Do you really believe that Hillary would be the president that Barack Obama
did? I will tell you that Goldman Sachs gave Barack Obama $1,013,091. JP Morgan Chase gave him close to $1 million. Citigroup gave him $750,000. Morgan Stanley gave him half a million. So they give it to both sides. It's like when the Rothschilds backed both sides of World War One. No, Rothschilds did back both sides in World War One.
So what? If X amount of dollars was given by
are you telling me that
if you have X amount of dollars, the people are that stupid that they're going to be manipulated? That's what you're saying.
Of course. Politicians live to be manipulated.
Then you really want to go back to Joe McGinnis's book, The Selling of the President, 1968.
Every candidate.
And there was a lot of truth to that.
Beholden to the people that give them money.
Then what? I'm talking about the average Joe Doakes voter.
The average Joe voter's donation doesn't matter. If he's not given $1 million.
What are you going to do when people pay more attention to American Idol instead of American president?
All right, say that again.
That's the culture we're in.
Yeah, people don't care.
You're right.
Yeah, if you're saying that the average vote doesn't count, Mike, I'll have to disagree with you there.
No. The average vote is not important to the candidate. That's not the same as doesn't count.
Your
importance as compared to the guy who gave him $1 million means nothing.
No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you in one part. So understand where I'm coming from when I say I agree with you. I agree with you by saying that the money that is contributed to a candidate is used to do what? For influence on the voter. But at the bottom line, remember, no one buys votes. They only buy influence. And giving you that money is you take this money and you put out those ads and you travel all over the country and you drum up your message and you got $50 to spend those. And if people see you more than your opponent.
But there's no payback to those donators on the backside. You don't really believe that.
No. If there's anything I know, if we look at this administration, there's been nothing.
It's not just this one, though. Look at Billy Tozan. Billy Tozan, the former rep from Louisiana who wrote the Medicare Expansion Act that got all the prescription drug coverage put into Medicare, immediately left Congress and went to get a big high-dollar job as a consultant for Big Pharma.
So what are you doing about it? Throwing your hands up and saying, oh, worry, mercy me, what are we going to do?
No,
or are you taking action?
What,
I don't know you.
So I'm
wondering,
saying, no,
what can you or you as the individual do about this? You, maybe you generic.
Well, I think the discussion is a good start. Because trust me, I understand where Mike is coming from, because he's of the belief system that corporate money is corrupting our electoral system. You know, and a lot of people believe that. In fact, but I only look at it from a level that as far as it can go. And I'm looking at this from Realville in a sense of saying, look, I understand they're giving these candidates money so they can back them so they can be elected. But the bottom line.
Let's go beyond this, Reese. Condi Rice last night said education is the new civil rights. So if people are that stupid that they're going to let corporate money determine where their brain is going, maybe the fault lies in the root of our educational system.
Again, that's where the challenge is going to come from. That's where the fight's going to be fought. And as much as there are people out there who are Ron Paul fans and people who believe that he should have been elected in some way, I'll tell you this. Ron Paul had one very strong problem with his candidacy. And if it wasn't about policy, even though there were plenty of young people who backed him, their biggest problem with Ron Paul would have been the same thing that was the problem with John McCain. And they used it every day during 2008. And guys, I'll tell you, go back, because I talked about this often back in WRKO. They would use his age. That's what they did to John McCain every day. They would find a way to separate him through ageism. They had a commercial in 2008 talking about John McCain was around before jump ropes, for crying out loud. That's the kind of campaign that the Obama campaign did against him. That is
exactly what
would happen.
I could beat Ron Paul if he was a nominee. I'd say, look at the cranky old man from Texas. He just came down the stairs. Old grandpa, put him back to bed.
And a lot of people, whether you believe it or not, although there are people who agree with him, Mike, I will say this. There's a strong amount of people out there who don't just think of him as a cranky old man. They may think of him intelligent, but I'll tell you what he really appeals to. He appeals to a softer side of youth. That's the reason why the kids like him. He appeals to a softer side of youth, a person who doesn't want war, who wants to get rid of the Fed, like going after the banking system, of course, going after the Treasury.
He appeals to idealism.
He really appeals to what kids – he's almost – I'll put it to you this way. He's Occupy Light in a lot of ways, man. In a lot of ways. And that's why
You're absolutely incorrect. Where Ron Paul's biggest selling point is he's the only guy, and he's been the only guy for the last 30 years, who wants to address the nightmare of our economy. That's why people supported Ron Paul.
But people aren't listening to the economy. They're listening to the drug part. They're listening to the war part. They're listening to the banking part. And I speak to a lot of young people who love Ron Paul, and they don't mention what you brought up.
His largest selling point was auditing the Federal Reserve.
That was a large
guy that was.
Dennis, he is absolutely right. That was a strong selling point, especially for young kids, auditing the Federal Reserve.
He wrote a book called End the Fed, for God's sake.
But a lot of his supporters scare the hell out of me. They say, Katrina was caused by George Bush, and we have the contrails and the black helicopters.
What scares me is 62-year-old people, no offense, who are willing to sacrifice our young men to support Israel. That's what scares me.
I knew it would come out sooner or later about Israel. You brought up the Rothschilds. You brought up the Goldman Sachs. I'm a Catholic, so you can't offend me with Israel.
Hold up, guys. Let's take a break.
Shalom.
For a while, forget some school off. Now, I could deal with this all day, every day. If I could get – this is when you can't have Kool-Aid Man on the air, because this one's great. Thank you, guys. Stick around. We'll take a break for a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. Check out some more in the RNC. We got another black person on the stage. I'm going to check if MSNBC is covering her. We'll be back at Teresa on the Radio.
This is Bob. Bob is a normal guy. He has a good job. He works hard to provide for his family. And he tries to keep himself informed on current events. There's just one problem.
I don't think President Obama is doing a very good job.
Bob is a racist. There's nothing worse than having a racist around saying hateful things.
I don't think it's unreasonable for people to have to show ID when they go vote.
Whoa, Bob. Slow down with the bigotry for just a minute. People like Bob are still very upset that there's a black man in the White House. As a result, they oppose President Obama's policies. Not because they're bad policies, but because they just don't like black people. How could anyone oppose such great policies? They're awesome and are working super well.
But how do I talk about my political beliefs without being a racist?
Let's give Bob a few pointers on how not to be racist.
Did you know that under President Obama, more people are on food stamps than ever before?
Bob. That's racist. Just because something is true doesn't mean that it's not bigoted.
But how can something be racist if it's true?
That's a racist question.
We need to secure our southern border to stem the tide of illegal immigration.
Racist! Calling undocumented workers illegal simply because they're here illegally is proof that you hate Mexicans.
My adopted son is Mexican.
Doesn't matter, still racist.
I see.
I like Barack Obama. He's a light-skinned African-American with no Negro dialect.
Now that's racist.
Nope, not so fast there, Bob. It's only racist if it's said by someone who doesn't support President Obama and his policies. Susie is a Democrat, so it's okay if she says it.
That doesn't make any sense.
Sure it does. A liberal can't be racist. It's not possible because liberals support the things that are good for the black community.
So a conservative and a liberal can say exactly the same thing, but only the conservative is racist for saying it.
Now you're getting it, Bobby. For example, when a conservative politician says something that's not directly racist, but is construed that way by liberals, he loses his job, like Majority Leader Trent Lott. But when a Democrat in the same position turns out to be a former Klansman, like Majority Leader Robert Byrd, he's a liberal hero!
It's all starting to make sense now, so I can say all sorts of racist stuff as long as I vote for the right people.
Right! So if Susie says,
I am so proud of myself for voting in the first African American president in 2008.
Her statement has no racial implications whatsoever. But if someone says,
I voted for Barack Obama last time, but I'm thinking about voting for Mitt Romney this year.
That person is totally racist.
Hold on a second. How can someone who voted for Barack Obama the first time be racist just because they don't vote for him this time? They obviously didn't care about his skin color before.
Sometimes people don't realize that they're racist until later.
How can someone become racist in 4 years?
That's a clown question, bro.
I'm so confused. I don't want to see the country go down the toilet, but I also don't want the people at work to think I'm a racist.
Well, remember, Bob, if the country is ruined, you can always blame it on George W. Bush.
You're right. I'm going to vote for Barack Obama because I'm not a racist.
Way to go, Bobby. Remember, racism in the workplace is never cool.
I'm Barack Obama, and I've never seen this ad. Didn't even know it existed.
Hey, homie.
Look what I got.
Are you tired of government picking favorites in business? Is red tape making it impossible for you to earn a living? When private businesses collude with the government to exclude competition, you get cronyism. How do you get rid of it? You can try passing laws, but that only covers up the problem. There's a better solution.
Hi, Willie Bays here with another fantastic product.
Crony Clean, the spray that breaks down cronyism by breaking down government bureaucracy. Normal products attack the side effects of cronyism by passing more laws and business regulations. But Crony Clean is different. It targets the root cause of cronyism, too much government. Using proven political science, Crony Clean eliminates the government influence on business, giving everyone the right to make a living. No more concentrated benefits, no more dispersed costs. America! Why waste your time and money fighting an uphill battle against special interest groups? With Crony Clean, you have the power to fight. Crony Clean can be applied to restore economic liberty, property rights, the First Amendment, and much more. Order now and receive Crony Clean for the unbelievable price of nothing. Just pay fewer taxes. But wait, there's more. Call in the next 20 minutes and you'll receive a free gift, the dollar deflator. It forms a strong barrier to protect your dollar savings from inflation. Keep America free by keeping the government out of businesses. Order now.
Offer not available in Washington, D.C. and surrounding areas. Side effects may include more economic freedom, jobs, less corruption, and improved quality of life. If you're a politician or lobbyist, please consult your doctor before using Crony Clean. Order today.
Any moment now, we should have Clint Eastwood coming up with Marco Rubio, and then, of course,
Mitt Romney making the speech,
I guess, as everyone's putting it, of his political career, and whether or not, I don't know, whether or not that's going to be relevant, I don't know. We'll know in a couple of minutes. Like I said, as soon as Clint Eastwood comes on, we're going to jip it. We will definitely join that. A heated conversation, I guess, about, in essence, about a three-party system, which Mike in Florida supports, and of course, Dennis in...
I'd say it's inevitable.
Well, right, I'm sorry, Mike is suggesting that it's inevitable because he believes that the current system that we have doesn't work.
Reese, is Mike saying that all young people normally are for Ron Paul?
Before you chime in.
No.
I'm sorry.
What I'm saying is that if the Republican Party is going to ally itself with hard right social conservatism and war, they're going to lose a massive part of the voting bloc.
I don't see hard right social conservatism with war. But anyway, here's something that came up into my feed, in my Facebook feed, and I think it's important. This is from a friend of mine who's 25. Right now, he's a big part of Occupy Wall Street with the whole thing. He's demonstrating right now in Tampa. He's been arrested in New York City and for trying to take over or whatever the hell he did, the Brooklyn Bridge. And this is what he's saying, quote, on 11 August from New York, quote, people really need to get past this whole Ron Paul phase. Ron Paul is not Jesus Christ, nor is he the world's greatest politician. He is an isolationist politician who wishes to immediately abolish the Fed and bring back the gold standard, which is a really bad idea at the rate he wishes to have such done. End the wars overseas and just start a war here at home with all the austerity measures his administration would put in place. Stop being a bunch of goddamn sheep and think for yourselves, close quote. That makes you want to think.
Guys, I got to just say one thing.
This,
this isn't about Ron Paul per se, but you've got to admit, or you're in denial, we are not, the Republicans or conservatives in general, not reaching out to 20-somethings, far more, less concerned about the abortion issue and issues that Republicans want to hang their hat on. If they don't address that, you will not see Republican president going forward ever in my life, I believe.
Well, let me ask you this. what advice would you have to Obama and getting young people included with for the people who might not agree with him or too liberal?
I have no advice for him. Get out of office. That's my advice, but it's...
You know, I never even got to say what I called for.
You've got to reach out.
Well,
not
let me
have to hand out marijuana sticks everywhere you know, at these Republican conventions, but you've got to kind of back off some of these social issues a bit to understand younger mind and at least speak to them. Ron Paul spoke their concerns. No one, you know, really in this right now. Obama knows how to do that. Exactly what he's doing. Republicans are not doing it to great effect, and I think that.
I think Ryan did last night. He said either you vote for us or you have no future, essentially.
Do you really believe that?
Let me jump in here real quick about the gold standard. You know, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal today that said at the Tampa Bay Republican National Convention that there was talk about bringing the gold standard to mainstream. This is a conversation that people are having quietly in the conservative party. So, Mike, let me ask you, do you think that some of that came from people like Ron Paul? Are they possibly?
Absolutely. But, you know, if you look at the history of the gold standard, you know, the explosion of credit and the spiraling of the uncontrolled printing of money and the debt we're in is directly related to Nixon taking us off the gold standard in, what, 72?
Yeah.
72.
You know, when your money is not backed by anything and the Fed can print it willy-nilly, that's how you end up with a $16 trillion deficit or a national debt.
No, 100% agree with you there. Now, I've had this huge argument. I don't want to go backwards and go into conspiracy theories. But do you remember there was this one argument that they believed that that the argument was to get off the gold standard – and to stay off the gold standard, but there was some rumbling about the fact that people were trying to bring back the gold standard after Nixon did it, and bringing back the gold standard would, of course, affect us in a way that would keep us off a fiscal cliff for the next 40 years. So I'm probably one of the only few that's ever read that, but. I believe, honest to goodness, that the reason why people are now talking about it is because now that they know that the entitlement society has absolutely overrun this country, that the gold standard has to be considered. I mean, this is something that cannot be ignored. But Ron Paul, with every other one of his policies, or if you listen to any one of his speeches, what a lot of people say is that what we would consider fiscally responsible is completely overshadowed by the we can't police the world and, you know.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question again? If his feelings on war and foreign policy are so outside of the mainstream, why did he get more contributions from active duty military than every other Republican candidate combined?
Well, here would be my question then. Does the military just want to be an entity that does nothing and just get paid? I mean, why be a part of a military that doesn't fight for anything?
It's called the Department of Defense, not the Department of Nation Building.
Used to be the Department of War.
How many trillions of dollars have we wasted? Just look at it from an economic standpoint. How much money have we pissed down a hole in Iraq and Afghanistan? And for what?
Can we honestly say that?
Oh, no, it's Bob Hedlund. Hey, Bob Hedlund is there. Hey, guys, Sal and Dennis, I just saw Bob Hedlund on the screen.
What screen?
Well, you know what? I think we just won the election.
I'm watching
the
Fox.
I thought Bob was on the phone.
Yeah, no, Bob Hedlund was on. He's on PBS. They just showed him in the front row.
Oh, Bob has a great restaurant in Weymouth. I'll give a plug there for him.
I love Bob. Bob just sent me a message a couple of weeks ago and said hello. He wished me a happy birthday, too. So here's my argument back to the whole gold standard and Ron Paul. Why don't we put him on hold? I'm sorry about that. Here's one of the things that I think is an issue with that. When you talked about nation building, You know, I go back to, I remember when George Clooney had given some speech somewhere, and he was talking about going to the war in Iraq and being in the war in Afghanistan, and it was this big argument that all of these liberals were having about going to war and going to war and going to war. These people didn't cause 9/11, don't go to war. But yet, George Clooney was at a congressional subcommittee hearing talking about sending troops and money to Darfur.
Hey, I don't support that either. You know, if we were actually making sense and we wanted to go after a country that was the greatest threat to our national security, we'd invade Mexico. But nobody talks about that. We've got a third world narco state in our southern border that is destroying our country, that is sending millions of illegal aliens here to get rid of them to us and tanking our economy, and nobody mentions that. But we're worried about Iraq and Afghanistan? Really? Afghanistan, a nation where nobody has ever had a successful war except Alexander the Great? That nation? Do our leaders not study their history before they get us involved in these quagmires?
Reese, he's got a point.
You know what? You got me there. You got me there.
Why are we there? I've got a huge problem. Why are we in Afghanistan? You're absolutely right.
But you know what?
See, Papacito.
But those stories... These stories that happen in the Middle East, in places like Syria, especially what's going on in Syria, especially what we had in Bosnia, you know, those stories, they gain the national attention.
Yeah.
And the argument is always, and no, I'm not saying it's fair, but the argument always is, what are we going to do about it as Americans? Is America going to go over there and help these people who can't fight for themselves, defend the weak?
But, Reese, you mentioned Syria a while back on the show. And
sure.
I don't know if you quite understand what's going on in Syria.
Well, we would be supporting the Muslim Brotherhood if we did.
Do you know that Assad is not even a Sunni or a Shia Muslim?
He's an Alawite.
I do know that.
He's an Alawite. They're like moderate Islamic mystics.
Yes,
the people he's killing, slaughtering, are the same people that we're fighting in friggin' Afghanistan. So I don't really care if he kills them, because we kill more of them than he's doing.
Anyway, Reese, I'd like to talk about something that I didn't even have a chance to bring up at the top of the first hour, I called. I want to talk about Christie. I thought it was a good speech until I thought about it and listening to Dick Marvis's comment. It was all about him. It was all about how great I am.
You're
and
worried?
He didn't bash Obama like he should have and really tore him a new one.
If you listened to yesterday's show, I said the same thing. I expected that. We all did. But I don't have a problem with it anymore. I don't. I thought he was supposed to go out there personally and talk about him. It's his first time on a national stage. I'm kind of okay with him talking about himself. But
said that he's more popular outside of New Jersey than inside New Jersey. That this was really
there.
A re-elect me speech because next year is their elections, I believe.
It's a blue state. They hate them there.
And that's another thing. Where the hell did we start with this blue state, red state crap? Notice how the Reds aren't associated with Democrats, but Republicans.
Oh,
shouldn't red be associated with Democrat?
Well, if you're talking about all the death and destruction, Yeah.
I mean, when you think of it, you know, that red state, blue state came from, I think, NBC because they colored the states different on a map on election night and another cultural thing.
Red is bad, blue is good. Hey, quick question, back to Mike. In fact, about that, what would the new party be if there was going to be a third party?
No, I mean the libertarians have some strong issues. You know, they're pretty fiscally responsible. Gary Johnson's strong on illegal immigration, but the libertarian name may be tainted. What you're going to have is a party that's concerned with closing the border, which neither party has the balls to talk about. Elimination of infringement upon our personal rights. Because let's face it, man, have you gone to an airport lately?
Oh, yeah.
How out of control is TSA?
Another government entity. What do you expect?
You know, how about this bill that even Ryan voted for, this NADA, you know, which is another invasion of your privacy. I think young people want to have privacy rights. They want to be left alone. They want lower taxes. They want no interventionist war. They want to fix the economy. If you can find somebody who will put those together in a party, you have a winner.
So what are you going to do about people like me who's a social conservative? Piss me off and alienate me?
No, you're going to have your own party. You're going to stick with the GOP.
I'm going to have my own party.
You're going to be in the GOP.
Well, then you're not going to win.
Because
you're not going to win.
I don't think so.
It's either outside the tent pissing out or inside the tent pissing. You know what I'm saying. You piss out of the tent or piss in the tent.
Hey,
but you know what do you want?
I haven't seen the Republicans stand up against any of these privacy violation things. They all were lockstep with this Patriot Act nonsense.
Well, I guess you never spoke to me.
Hold on.
I held office.
Wait.
Mike,
let's be honest. The reason why you're talking about post 9/11 and fear of the American people. I mean, you have something like that happen on our soil.
And what was
I'm
the quote
sure you
when tyranny comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag?
Did you lose anybody on 9/11?
Whoa. When tyranny comes to America.
It wouldn't matter if I did.
Whoa.
That's to me.
Wait a minute, I want to hear
that.
I've had
people die in car crashes. I don't want to ban cars.
Wait, you said when tyranny comes to America, what?
When tyranny comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag. A situation like 9/11 was easily exploitable by people wanting to take away your rights and make you feel safe.
You know,
but
a ship
in a harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are made for.
You know what? I'm willing to agree with you there, but remember, we're talking about something that people could not fathom afterwards, and they believed that, look, after watching that happen, after witnessing it, fear really took over our lives at that point. It's like, wow, they can get us. They can
Meanwhile, illegal aliens kill something like 9,000 people a year in this country.
Is it that high?
Well, I didn't hear Ron Paul mention a thing about illegal aliens.
Oh, Ron Paul has the strongest illegal immigration policy of all of them, sir. He wants to close the border.
He ain't going anywhere.
Rights.
When are you going to get it through your thick skull?
And you wanted to know if he mentioned it? I'm telling you, he mentioned it.
And what the hell is his name? Gary Johnson or whatever the link is out there? He's going nowhere either.
You brought it up. I'm telling you what his platform is.
That's right, I brought it up. I had to do it for Reese.
His platform is the strongest of them, including Mittens Romney.
Look, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you something. You're going to fall off the toilet seat when I tell you.
$10 million, by the way.
I voted for Ron Paul in the Massachusetts primary. Suck that on your pipe and smoke it. Because
I
wasn't going to have the cells tell me how to vote.
But, you know, Mitt Romney stuck the FDIC and the taxpayers for $10 million in a bailout of pain.
For Christ's sake, if I'm talking to a friggin' wall. I just said I wasn't going to have the Republican establishment tell me how to vote. I like Rick Santorum. I wanted to vote for Rick, but I voted for Ron Paul to send a message. Do you know how many votes he got in my entire city of 70,000? 100 votes. That's it.
Well, apparently, he pulled enough to get a bunch of delegates at the convention and win the state
of
Minnesota.
And one of them's a friend of mine, a 19-year-old kid. But he didn't go anywhere.
But again, are you telling me that Ron Paul, again, Mike, do you believe that Ron Paul, had he had more financial backing, you believe that then he would have had more influence? Scott, if he's really that influential.
Man, he had plenty of money. But when the system is set against you and the media is set against you, you're screwed.
Bullshit.
He raised plenty of money.
Nobody put a gun to my head and tell me who to vote for. And no one puts a gun to anybody else to tell them who to vote for. Everybody knew Ron Paul. Everybody knew Mitt Romney. Everybody knew Reese on the radio.
Do you know how much time he got to speak at the debates?
I don't care.
He's been running since I was four years old. The media is telling you who you can vote for when they determine who gets to speak for a certain amount of time.
He's been running since I was 4 years old, it seems.
He was a libertarian, he turned his back on the Republican Party.
What more do you want? You think they're going to reward him? No way, Jose.
Can I talk?
All right, go ahead.
He got 3 minutes out of a two-hour debate. Who determines who gets to speak? The moderators. Who are the moderators? The
I didn't
media.
Pick them. I never would have had the debates because they were all they all sucked, to put it bluntly. They were all Democrat liberals. I mean, who cares? What's
Hold
your
on,
favorite pizza, Mr. Candidate? All the soft questions. He should have avoided
Hold
it.
On,
he said,
second.
Look, I'm not going to this charade, and this is it.
Dennis.
He would have got my respect.
Hey, Dennis. Dennis, hold on for a second. Sal, did you want to get a word in here?
That's just good stuff. At the end of the day, you know, Ron Paul may not have been electable by a lot of people's estimation. I probably wouldn't have voted for him for various reasons. But at the end of the day, what Mike's saying is valid. 20 years from now, when social conservatism isn't on the minds of the young people who will be, you know, in their 30s and 40s, then you will have, whether it's another party or not, is not the case, but your platform will not look like it looks today. And the Republicans are not seizing opportunity to reach out to these people and the way they're thinking and their concerns about war, about privacy rights. So I think some of what Mike says is valid. And those votes will make a difference. And the lack
Can you
of
forget
those
it was my generation that had was Woodstock and gave you all this garbage?
they're not even embracing the movement in Arizona. You know, Jan Brewer is not on Mitt Romney's hip. And if you ask Americans what they feel about illegal immigration, most Americans want it over.
But you people saying social conservatism is dead, I mean, you know, it was my generation that gave you the hippies and all that stuff, and now we're social conservatives. So you're saying that people won't grow up?
No, that's socially liberal.
What?
Hippies are socially liberal, not socially conservative.
But they grew up. I never was a hippie.
Yeah, they turned into...
I hated the Beatles.
It turned into Saul Alinsky and college professors and Bill Clinton and Charles Schumer.
I can't stand those two jamokes.
But do you think you're reaching out to the masses when you say... My story? Unless it's forcible.
Somebody's breaking up and giving me echo.
Can't
Reese, want to check that?
Check. Are we here?
Yeah, I can hear something, but there was some echo and some breakup.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead. Sal, say it again. I'm sorry. We got cut off.
You know, the only point I wanted to make, I think Mike makes a lot of valid points. At the end of the day, do you think the 20-somethings are focused on, you know, abortion? Do you think that's what they're thinking about? No, they can't get jobs. They're worried about, you know, their future. They're worried about going to war and wars they don't. These are real issues. And I'm not a Ron Paul voter. This is what I'm getting at. I don't see the Republicans understanding that voting group is out there. And they're out there. And you've got to address them. That's about it. That's it. As far as the only point I had to make. And I just hope this doesn't be the difference in the election.
I'm in the future, if indeed that's it's going to be the case, if Mike, if you know, I don't know, 20 years, do you think? You think it's really going to change in the next 20 years? Do you think
20,
it's going to happen?
Soon. Very soon.
Very soon. Okay, so
soon.
In essence, it's going to have to be a political party that does so much damage that somebody turns around and says, look, we just got to go another way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, look, I'm 42, so I'm older than the generation we're thinking of, right? But look, I'm a staunch Second Amendment guy. I am anti-illegal immigration. I want fiscal conservatism. But I also support gay marriage, and I think women should have an abortion. So where do you
God
put
forbid.
Me? I can't go with the Democrats because they want to take my guns away, and they spend money like a drunken sailor on shore leave. And I can't go with the GOP because they want to get us involved in interventionist war, and they don't want to do anything about illegal immigration either, and they want to put the Bible in my life.
So
the third party's got to come in.
You like John Stossel, don't you? John Stossel, who has his own
John Stossel's okay, yeah.
Yeah, because he sounds extremely similar to what it is that you're saying. It's a very middle of the road way to go. I mean, if I were to look at this or look at exactly how you feel politically, I would have to call you middle of the road, because at the same time that you believe in, I guess that's the whole term of being libertarian, is that you believe in absolute freedom, is that you for you to be control of your body and to do what it is that you want.
Except I would round up all illegal aliens and deport them.
Well,
aren't you confusing liberty with license?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Because he doesn't want to give license to what he deems as being absolutely wrong. I talk to Mike all the time, and Mike always expresses this. He believes that when it comes to someone, to the human body, and you are to have control of your body, which is why, you know, he can support abortion for whatever reason it may be, because that is your body. You do what it is that you wish. On the other hand, he believes in the right of liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And he believes that that's being taken away by those who take advantage of the programs or society that we've literally or should be making affordable to the people who are citizens of the United States. So,
Reese, you said pursuit. Remember what Newt Gingrich said earlier when he ran? He said, you have the pursuit but not the right of happiness.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the pursuit of happiness. Right. But he doesn't believe that the pursuit of happiness should be afforded to those who are not members of this country. If you want to pursue liberty in your own country and the pursuit of happiness should be in your own company, don't come here as an illegal and just think that you're going to plop yourself down in our country and then you get the rights and liberties of everyone else.
I agree with that.
And birthright citizenship is an outdated concept. You know, birthright citizenship was given when a lot of parents, you know, came here and weren't citizens, but they were legal residents. It wasn't ever meant for some beaner to come across the border and drop her baby in an ER in California on the taxpayer dime and then have that kid be a citizen so mommy and daddy can bring three relatives each over and I'll get on the dole.
Right.
Birthright citizenship is a joke.
You don't want anchor babies, in other words.
Absolutely not.
I just found my party.
Well, look, this speech is about to come up, so we're gonna end it now. I appreciate all of you, as usual, a lively discussion. This was really, really good today, guys. Thank
Love
you
guys.
So much.
Where do we go to buy ads on this show? Where, you know,
what, for my show?
Sure, why not? It should be syndicated, right? Better than 680. Reese, you know what I mean when if I say 680.
I do. Don't worry, you can mention them here. I know exactly
long
what you're talking about.
Sure, and help us
with WBZ. As long as you put me on the payroll, Reese, remember, you do need some diversity.
You got it.
I'm like, I want to sign up for that party. That party pretty much describes me all the way.
Reese, thank you. And you and I are not exactly the same person, you know what I mean?
There's a lot
so
of
my
people.
My party is pretty damn diverse.
You know what? You're absolutely right. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. They're about to get into the thick of this right now. Clint Eastwood should be coming out soon, so I hope everybody watches. There will be a tomorrow.
Hey, Reese, real quick.
You know what I wanted to say about that earlier?
Hold on, Sal, what did you say?
I said, do you do a Charles Nelson Reilly impersonation?
No, I don't do Charles Nelson Reilly. I love Charles Nelson Reilly. Back
you
before I
from the past.
You didn't even work, guys. Have a good night.
Back before I knew what gay was. I love you guys. I will talk to you soon. Tomorrow we'll talk about Clint Eastwood and we'll see how this went. Thanks again, guys. We appreciate it.
Make my
check
night.
You out tomorrow. We're on the radio, same back time, same back channel.